Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we have returning to the program is Dr. Cal Beissner of the Cornwall Alliance. Cal, so great to have you back.
Thanks very much, Jerry.
All right, let us talk about the idea of man-made climate change, and specifically we want to focus on the recent Paris Accords. And it seems as if almost the whole world, or let's say even the majority of Americans, get it. This is a bunch of baloney, but the elitists don't get it. And I don't know. I just find an interesting contrast in that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the reason why the elitists don't get it, or we could call them the global elite, don't get it, is that they don't want to get it. Because frankly, if indeed global warming is not primarily man-made, and if indeed whatever proportion of global warming is man-made is not dangerous, and if indeed the benefits of spending trillions of dollars trying to reduce the man-made portion of global warming would not have any significant beneficial effect, well, then that takes away the rationale for the two real goals of the global elite in pressing the issue of dangerous man-made global warming. The first rationale is to pursue a global pattern of wealth redistribution from the advanced, industrialized, wealthy nations, basically the West, so to speak, although Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Japan, etc. are not exactly West. But they want to do a redistribution of wealth from the industrialized nations to the less industrialized or the non-industrialized nations. And they use as an excuse for this the notion that we in the industrialized world have already caused dangerous global warming, and CO2 that we've already put into the atmosphere has committed the world to more global warming, and so we're causing harm to these developing countries, and so we owe it to them to pay for that. But the other motive that they have, the other goal that they have, is not just this global redistribution of wealth, but also, and I think far more dangerously, the formation of global government, or at least the popular term for it now is global governance. Somehow that seems to be a little less scary sounding, so that's the term that they will use. We want global governance. They forget that you can't have governance without a government to govern. But at any rate, they're using this notion that all the nations of the earth need to cooperate together to fight this existential challenge to humanity as a rationale for pursuing global government. And, you know, the old British historian and philosopher Lord Acton said back in the 19th century, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. The very last thing you need in a world of fallen, sinful human beings is an actually global government, one than which there is no higher, one from which there is no escape. After all, there is no planet B. And as the environmentalists constantly say, hey, there's no planet B for us to go to if we mess up this one. Well, there's also no planet B for us to go to if we have a single government on this earth that is potentially abusing everybody.
Your perspective is that this is all based on false science anyway.
Yes, it is. Frankly, the basic idea that adding some carbon dioxide to the atmosphere is likely to increase the average temperature of the atmosphere, that basic idea I find no problem with whatsoever. I think that's quite sensible because carbon dioxide is what is called an infrared-absorbing gas. Infrared is heat. When solar energy comes to the Earth from the sun, it comes in the form of light. When it strikes the Earth's surface, it bounces back in the form of heat. And carbon dioxide and various other molecules absorb some heat, some infrared bouncing out from the Earth. And as they do that, they also re-radiate that heat outward, and some of it comes back down toward the Earth. So it makes sense that there should be some warming. But the problem is that that warming is vastly exaggerated, because those who talk about this as dangerous tend to ignore and downplay the effect of, for instance, water vapor, which accounts for over 95% of all of our so-called greenhouse warming. All of this infrared absorption and re-radiation is done by water vapor. We can't do a thing to control that. The human contribution to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is very, very small compared with the natural contribution, and the total warming that might be attributed to all that we have added in the way of CO2 to the atmosphere since the Industrial Revolution, namely about 40% increase in it, the total warming that might be attributed to that is somewhere in the range of 0.1 to about 0.6 degrees Celsius. There's no indication that that's dangerous, or that even 2 or 3 or 4 times that much would be dangerous. In fact, history tells us that in periods when the Earth has been that much warmer than now, people have actually done much better. Cold is much more dangerous to humanity and to the rest of life on Earth than is warmth. So what we're actually seeing is a great improvement, not only by helping to lift the Earth out of what was called the Little Ice Age that ended about 150 years ago, but also in terms of adding CO2 to the atmosphere, which is basically plant food. Plants grow better with more CO2, and the CO2 that we've added has probably resulted in about $3.2 trillion extra crop production over the period from 1960 to 2012, and can be projected to add about another $9.8 trillion from 2012 to 2050. So the scientific evidence really suggests that the warming effect of CO2 is very small, not large, and it's not dangerous, but the biological effect in terms of increased plant growth and therefore more food for everything that eats plants, which is basically everything, that's a very good thing and not to be feared.
Help me to understand. Did I hear you correctly in the sense that you were saying that less than 1% at most, less than 1% of 1 degree is impacted by man in any way in terms of global warming? Is that correct?
Not quite. What I said is that the total warming that we could credibly attribute to what CO2 that we've added to the atmosphere since
to man.
The Industrial Revolution.
Okay.
Man, right?
Yeah.
Probably amounts to no more than about a tenth of a degree to perhaps 6/10 of a degree Celsius. So from about 1 to 6/10 of a degree.
1 to 6/10 of a degree. That's still less than one. Well, it's
1 degree.
At most, it's 1 degree or so. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, you get the impression the sky is falling. The sky is falling. Bette Midler blames global warming deniers because, you know, if there's a storm that occurs and it hurts people, you know, somewhere in the country, and there are a lot of weird storms. There were tornadoes, you know, that impacted the South,
on
Christmas
time.
Day. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of freak weather that goes on, and you're saying that that is not related to man's activity.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there is no correlation whatsoever between the increase in global average temperature that occurred basically from 1977 to 1997 and any change in either the frequency or the intensity of severe weather events, hurricanes, tornadoes, thunderstorms, droughts, floods, etc. In fact, we are in a long-term low for hurricane activity in the North Atlantic. Globally, there's been no increase in cyclonic activity. There has actually been a decline in annual tornadic activity in the United States, particularly of the strongest tornadoes. So these correlations simply aren't there. You know, my friend, Dr. Richard Lindzen, who is an emeritus professor of meteorology and climate science at MIT.
Can you say his last name again?
That's Richard Lindzen, L-I-N-D-Z-E-N.
Okay.
Dick points out that, frankly, this less than a degree change is simply irrelevant. I mean, keep in mind, in a typical day at most locations around the Earth, there will be a shift in temperature from midnight to noon of, on the range of 15, 20, 25 degrees. And we're afraid that a global average temperature change of a fraction of a degree is going to cause great problems. There's just nothing to be feared here. Human beings can thrive in any climate, from the Arctic Circle to the Sahara Desert, if they are reasonably well off. They can't thrive anywhere if they're dirt poor, not even in the best, idyllic paradise of some South Pacific tropical island. They can't thrive if they're extremely poor. And that's what's really dangerous about this, is that the pressure to try to fight global warming is essentially pressure to reduce economic development, trapping billions of people in extreme poverty. Well, that's what kills people.
Wow, amazing. Okay, we have just a couple minutes to wrap up. How about some comments about Paris and anything new that was decided there?
Well, there really was nothing particularly new decided. The agreement that came out is all voluntary. There are intentions of CO2 emission reductions or restraints, slowing of the rapidity of the increase of CO2 emissions, and so on. Frankly, complete compliance with everything intended by the various countries voluntarily would have no significant impact on global average temperature at the end of the century. The real usefulness, though, of the Paris Agreement, even though it's not legally enforceable, not legally binding on any nation, the real usefulness is as a moral whip or club, so to speak, for the global elite, including people like President Obama, to use on the citizens of the developed countries, saying, see, here, we got this global agreement. All these countries have committed to these things. We have to do this, too. This is why you have to accept such policies as the Clean Power Plan or a forthcoming, international agreement that really would be legally binding on emission reductions. That kind of thing is why the Cornwall Alliance put together a petition called Forget Climate Change, Energy Empowers the Poor, that people can read and sign at cornwallalliance.org. That's the petition, Forget Climate Change, Energy Empowers the Poor. We've also just recently released a new documentary video called Where the Grass is Greener, Biblical Stewardship versus Climate Alarmism. And that is available at wherethegrassisgreenerthemovie.com. That's wherethegrassisgreenerthemovie.com.
Now, Cal, you are coming at this in the sense of you are a Christian theologian. Dr. Cal Beisner, used to teach at Knox Seminary and so forth. And in fact, to really polish your apple, I know a man that I respect highly named Vishal Mangalwadi, who actually decided to have his children brought to a school that you used to teach at only because you were a professor there. I mean, that's how wonderful you are and respected in that sense. Now, there are some evangelicals who are signing on to fighting global warming, and they think they're doing a good thing in doing that. It's my understanding they're doing that because they care about the poor. What is your comment?
Well, that's what they say, and what I would respond is simply that they're mistaken. I don't for a moment doubt that they care about the poor, but if you care, you also have to get your facts right. For instance, back in 2006, these folks issued a statement called the Evangelical Climate Initiative, and it was initially signed by about 86 Christian college presidents, mission presidents, megachurch pastors, and so on. And the problem with it is that it didn't give any of the reasoning behind the claim that man-made global warming was dangerous. It simply stated the conclusion and essentially implied, trust us, this is the case. And various people signed on. And I spoke with one particular college president, very, very prominent Christian college. Anybody would recognize it if I named it. And he told me afterward, you know, Cal, I really didn't know any of the science. I just wanted to make it clear that I care for the poor. I want to protect the poor. Well, the truth is, if you really want to protect the poor, you don't slow economic growth to fight global warming that would not be significantly harmful. Rather, you promote that economic growth because that's what delivers them from the high rates of disease and premature death that always accompany poverty. Without abundant, affordable, reliable energy, the best source of which, especially in terms of what's useful for developing countries, is fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. Without that, no society can rise out of poverty and no society can stay out of poverty.
Excellent.
So if you really want to help the poor, you don't fight global warming. Instead, you promote economic development partly through access to abundant, affordable, reliable energy.
Excellent. Dr. Cal Beissner, again, thanks for being with us. CornwallAlliance.org for more information. Thank you now. God bless.
Jerry, thanks very much to you, and God bless you too.